Hello, welcome to Olden Village. Today is Thursday, July 30th, 1998. In the Creekside room this morning is Sheila McAvoy. Today's session number is 98-2, and it is titled The Spiritual Director and Discernment. Let's listen in.
We can start the tape, and I'll tell you who I am. My name is Sheila McAvoy. I come from Spokane, Washington, at the present moment. I actually was born in Seattle, Washington. I'll tell you right off, I'm a Roman Catholic by birth, desire, choice, and all those things. So I bring the Roman Catholic tradition with me. I'm very interested in this subject, and it's become a very ecumenical area, probably mostly so in the last 10 or 15 years. My degrees are in two, I have two different degrees, but they kind of are compatible. My first degree is in administration. I was a school principal and a superintendent of schools, or assistant superintendent of schools for a while, and then my focus shifted a bit because I'm a religious woman, I'm a nun, so I had to do some work within the Roman Catholic tradition of religious women and became very interested in the spiritual life and spiritual direction, which of course is my whole life since I was 18. But as that has grown, I also have a degree in pastoral counseling. I've done a great deal of spiritual direction, some of it by accident, meaning people have come to me and asked questions and somehow we've gotten involved in this. But more recently, more by design, people actually come seeking that, and I right now am directing a program out of Spokane called the Spiritual Exercises in Everyday Life, which is like a retreat program that goes for 9 months. It's called SEAL, and it was started in Seattle, actually, and it's of the Ignatian background. So I have a strong desire. I myself have a spiritual director, as I do have a supervisor, two different people, and that's an important part of this. Last week, when I came, I'm actually here because Mary Boyce is here, and she was asked she could bring somebody with her. You know, you bring your family, she could bring somebody. And then in the process, Dorothy Bass said, "Well, would you like to do something on spiritual direction?" She asked me if I'd do it for 10 days, and I said, "No, I wouldn't do that." But I thought, well, I could contribute. And one of the reasons was she felt I might feel a little more part of the village, and I really do. And, but when I began to put together the two kinds of things I did, I realized that this is such a vast subject, that there was so much, and you've pointed that out, that it was very hard to focus. So what I'm going to do today is really focus on the spiritual director, him or herself, more than on the spiritual direction process, although that will be part of the conversation. And I advertise this and discernment. The discernment part of this is not going to be a real big part of it. It will be, I will refer to it from time to time, but actually in this book, Practicing of Faith, there is an excellent article on discernment, but you can't separate them, nor can you separate the spiritual direction from director from the spiritual directee, so to speak, as those are the terms we use sometimes, nor can you do all of that in this 1 hour. That's when I listened to the thing made this morning, I thought, oh, I really was ambitious. I really was going to do something. One of the stories I need to tell you about myself is when I first started teaching, I was like 20 years old, barely. I wasn't even out of college at the time, and I had a mentor. I taught fifth grade, and the fifth grade teacher next to me, you know, we sat down every week and talked about this. And I had a supervisor come who was one of our sisters, one of our nuns. And I was scared to death that I wasn't going to have enough material, so I kept saying, give me enough material. So I was teaching, I was going to teach a half hour of math and a half hour of religion. Okay, started with religion. 15 minutes. You know how kids are when there's somebody in the classroom, they never respond to anything, you know. My first year, 15 minutes, I finished with religion, so then what do I do? So I go to math. You know, well, I was teaching fractions, you know, the fractions part where, you know, if you've ever taught, kids can pick up fractions like anything and still until you get into the complicated part. So 15 minutes, I'm finished with math. What do I do? I'm nothingness. I'm so embarrassed. So later when we were talking, the supervising person said to me, well, why didn't you go on in math? I said, I didn't know what was on the next page. So ever since then, I very, very carefully have put plenty, so I know what's on the next page. For me, Today what I'm going to do is focus on the role of the spiritual director. Why do people seek spiritual direction? A little bit about it, and discernment in the will of God. I'm grateful to Paul Rody on that part. So let me go back to what I did last week just briefly, because some of you were not here. And what I mean by spiritual direction and sort of the general part, anybody who talks about this professionally probably has a little different angle on this. In the theme of this particular summer, Guide Our Feet, I think a lot about the fact that when we are on a spiritual journey, we are tramping along a trail. Sometimes it's a wide trail in which all of us are tramping along in the same direction. Sometimes we're on parallel trails, you know, and kind of going in the same direction. Sometimes we're with people and sometimes we're alone. And occasionally we need, sometimes we need a human guide. Our guide, of course, is God. Our guide, of course, is Jesus. There is no question about the guide is who the guide is along the way. We are being guided by the cloud. We are being guided by the fire. We are being guided by the scripture. We're being guided by people who know something. But most of all, there is that part of each of us who has that personal experience of God. And sometimes we question it. And then we need a guide by our side, so to speak. A guide who is walking with us. Especially when we come to forks in the road. Or especially when we come to questions, or more especially when we come to places where we might need some help to get over the obstacles, or we need somebody to help us push the obstacles aside. So to me, one of the issues around the term spiritual direction is it's an old term. Spiritual direction has been around since, the Gospels particularly, but the early church. If you've been with Roberta Bondi, you hear about the Desert Fathers. That was the teacher and disciple. It's been in some form throughout the whole church experience. Sometimes we look at spiritual directors as like these people in the monasteries on the high mountains who are very ascetic and perfect. And you go and you get the guru sense. You know, the guru who's going to tell you how you're going to live the rest of your life. That doesn't kind of fit our thing because they're not kind of in the world today. And so nowadays, spiritual direction has become the thing to do. It's sort of like this is really, people are hungry. And so there are a lot of let's look at this kind of personal contact. The word is sometimes used spiritual companion or companion on the journey, and there are lots of other ways. But the traditional word is spiritual direction. The reason is because it is of the Spirit. The first person who is doing this is the Spirit. Then we are about God, Father, Son, Spirit, Creator, Redeemer, Spirit, whatever those terms we want to use. But the Spirit is important. So it is of the Spirit. It is the spiritual sense, not exclusively, but certainly a very important part. Direction has a lot of words, a lot of baggage with it. That doesn't mean that direction means that you give up your personal responsibility, and sometimes that's the way people want. Tell me what to do. How many times have you had people come to you and say, I don't know what to do, those of you in for pastors, and say, tell me what to do, tell me how to do this. That's not what the spiritual direction is about. Direction means that we're going in a direction, that somebody is growing. Somebody wants to go along a path, and so that there's sometimes we need a little correction on that path. Sometimes we need a little encouragement on that path. Sometimes we need all of those things that call us to faith on the path. Certainly, pastors are spiritual directors in the broad sense. There's no question about that. But in the more particular sense, what I'm talking about here is that it's an ongoing relationship, and this is a narrower definition. It's an ongoing relationship between two individuals. Actually, it's three, but I'm going to talk about two individuals. One is a helper for the other. And in the process, what the process is to live ever more fully in the Christian life. That's the purpose of spiritual direction. The third person there is the Spirit. If the spiritual director does not realize that this is God's work, then it's of no use. if sometime when you are talking to somebody and you get the feeling that this is more their personal stuff and not God's stuff, then listen to that gut level feeling. Like if you've had something that didn't work sometime. Because when I have somebody come to me and we talk about why you're coming or something of that kind, I always say the director is the spirit. And my role as a spiritual director is to listen to the spirit as you listen to the spirit and perhaps confirm, affirm, ask the question, what do you think, what do you see, how do you feel, but never to try to interpret that totally. To give some ideas, to go to the scriptures and see what Jesus says, to go to books or whatever it happens to be. The spirit is really the director in this. And if we don't think it's three of us, then we're not in the right place together. It's a very important piece. So, who are spiritual directors? They're all over the place, even though sometimes you can't find them, which is one of the things you want to know. But one of the things is, the spiritual director that I know that is the best is somebody who's already being sought out by others for their wisdom. It's a Roberta Bondi. Somebody comes and says, I heard your class, and there's a wisdom in it. Somebody's being sought out. That's how I started. I never thought about being a spiritual director. But I was in a position where people began to come and talk to me, and we began to talk about spiritual things. And pretty soon I was in it, and then I thought, ooh, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I don't know, and this is not good. You know, and so most of it was short-term. In the pastoral counseling kind of things, a lot of it was crisis-oriented, it was two or three times. But then I began to feel that maybe this was a calling, and I went to a mentor and talked about it, and pretty soon I started to run a retreat house, and pretty soon there were people coming, and when you were in retreat work, that's one of the natural aspects of that. So that's probably the aspect. Somebody's already coming to you. And maybe I'll get into how you figure that out in terms of a spiritual director. I think a spiritual director must have a discerning heart. That's a really wonderful experience. I could spend a whole period on what it is to have a discerning heart. When you look at the dictionary, discernment means to perceive the distinction, to make distinctions, to make out clearly. A discerning heart is someone who already has in their heart the ability, who has grown, not already has, but is growing in the ability to always seek out what is of God. To kind of discern, is this of God or is this of the flesh, if you want to put it, or is this of the evil spirit? Or is this of the person's kind? Now, that's a real delicate thing to decide. How can you decide whether that is true or not? I have no idea how you can decide that. I just know it's not something you teach people. It's really something that you understand. That it's like a good teacher. You don't teach teachers how to be good teachers. You can teach teachers how to teach, but there's something instinctive in them, and I don't know how to do that. But there is, it's somebody who has spent some time in their own lives, who have come to crossroads and been able to kind of weigh the pros and cons of something and to really look at it in a spiritual way, in a way in which God is leading them. And that's what I mean by a discerning heart. There's more to that, too, and you can add to that if you like to. The other part of that discerning heart is the fact that the person themselves is a prayerful person. And that you can find out with somebody. It's, you know, it's okay to ask somebody, how do you pray? When do you pray? This is not a kind of a thing that you just take on with somebody and say, well, you're a spiritual director and I know who you are. That's not true. So really, the person themselves must have some evidence and willing to share that they do pray. Not necessarily to tell you how they pray so that you become clones of them, but that they do pray and that they respect people's differences of prayer styles. Probably one of the most important things that I've learned is that it's sometimes very hard to hear somebody's prayer style and find out that I don't really like that particular person myself, but to really discern with them that that is a very comfortable place for them to be in prayer style. What I mean by prayer style is there are people who pray in a more contemplative way than mantra, you know, over and over, if you do the mantra, the kind of contemplative monk way. There are people who pray more with words. They do a lot with songs and those kinds of things. There are people who pray more with images. I love it when people pray and use their bodies, you know, and are able to express prayer in some sort of gesture or some sort of, or in art. I have people who do journals who have some art work. Who do, it's like it's a holistic thing. It's totally whole. But it has to be of that person's personality. Some people pray from their heads, you know, it's very petty, and try to get people to pray a little bit more from their guts, from their insides, from a deep sense of who we are. That's an important part. The other part, the other quality, I think, in a spiritual director is a passionate commitment to follow God. And those words are important. Passionate commitment to follow God. It's not just a thing to do. It's not just another way of being present to people, to be a helping profession. And one of the things that is very, very important, the spiritual director, as therapists, as doctors, as other people should be, but mostly in a spiritual director, should never be in the position of working out their own issues. We all have issues. We need that. That's why the spiritual director, him or herself, must have somebody that they go to. It seems to me that's an essential thing. And it's okay to ask a spiritual director whether they're under supervision, what their experience is. Because if it's just somebody who hangs out a shingle, you know, and pretty soon you begin to wonder a little bit, and you hear more about themselves than about God, or you hear more about their kind of life story than about God. Sometimes you can hear a person's life stories as an illustration, but if you begin to get this sense inside that they're more needy than you, you know, then and that does happen. I hate to say it, but that's what Roberta's saying about doing more harm. You know, because people are very vulnerable. So God is the central, a passionate commitment to follow God. To know God communicates directly with people. Not the only way God communicates, but God does communicate directly with people. And I would say a little more about how that is in the community. I don't want to be, tell you something theologically that is not correct. I mean, God does not only speak to people, and we have to be kind of careful about that. The other quality in the same way is the ability to be indifferent and not be attached to the outcome. That's indifference is a very hard thing. I don't mean not care when I say indifferent, because I think that's a different. The spiritual director needs to be a warm person who really cares. We're not talking about a person who's kind of coldly sitting back there and saying, okay, tell me about your prayer, you know. Or, okay, who's God for you? That kind of indifferent sense. We're talking about somebody who's very warm, who has a warmth about them, and it can manifest itself in some way, but is willing to sit with the person in their place, is willing to allow God to use God's time, not your time. There's a sense in which the worst people to do this are people who care too much because they want to fix it. We don't want people to fix it. People don't generally come for spiritual direction to get fixed. They might say that, but they really don't want to. And to have the patience, and that's the indifference, the patience to unfold that. I had a woman this last 2.5 years who's come to be with me. And she comes very regularly, about every 2 weeks. And that's a little unusual in spiritual direction. Usually it's about once a month, once you get started. Sometimes it's once a week to get started, but generally speaking, there's no rule, but that's generally speaking. This woman came every 2 weeks. She had just been in a parish, and this is Roman Catholic parish, so you're talking about a woman, which you already know is one of the issues around that. But she has an MDiv, she's very literate, she's got CPE, She has a beautiful voice. She was part of this parish as it was building. Her children were 10 and 9. She helped literally build the church. She and her family literally built the church. Put a lot of effort into building it liturgically, getting the baptismal found and all those kinds of things. And she was in charge of the liturgy. She did a wonderful job in the liturgy. Did a lot of things with the children and all that. And in the midst of about 8 or 9 years, the pastor's term was up. And in our tradition, the bishop appoints the next pastor. This particular church had gotten into great debt. And so the bishop decided they needed somebody who was a little more fiscally responsible. So the pastor comes in, and this pastor, they said, okay, we know he's a little bit conservative and he's going to talk about, stuff. But to make a long story short, he just absolutely undid everything. He totally became very rigid. Would not allow a lot of these things. So she left that particular parish. And in the process, began to search around what's going on. Okay, the first about 6 months, we dealt with her anger. I mean, that's all that happened. Anger, God. It just was 6 or 7 months. And then we thought, and then every time she'd run into somebody who would do something, you'd think she was just getting away from the thing and something would blow up and something. Well, then she would start talking about where she would go, and no parish seemed to fit her needs, and it sounds like the forum, and this kind of stuff. I had to admire her for sticking with it. It's like, I think I would have. There's a part of me that could say, why did you just go find a Lutheran church? They'll take you. Whatever those things. I didn't say that, but that's sort of the feeling. And it was, my sense was I wanted her to be over her pain. That was number one. And my second sense is I wanted her to find a parish for God's sake. Of course, I never said any of this, but I did talk about this to my supervisor. One of the other things I did was I just would have to bite my tongue because I just think that I would offer some sort of scripture for her to read or some sort of sense to read, and she would fall back again into this anger stuff. Finally, and then she got worried about her children. What were her children going to do in terms of worship and all these kinds of things and what she had taught them? And we got more and more involved in all of this. And finally, she decided she wasn't going to do anything and just take care of her children for the next 2 years. And then they'd go to a Catholic high school, maybe a community and stuff. But she wasn't satisfied with that. So just this last 4 months, all of a sudden, I decided that I was going to. I had this sense in which I wanted to kind of push her and kick her a little bit and say, let's get on with it. But I didn't do it that way. I just simply said, well, where have you gone? What are the places that you feel comfortable? And she began to find herself drawn bit by bit to a parish, actually, a parish I happen to work in, which is St. Aloysius Parish, which is run by Jesuits. And as she began to think about this, she went back to her origins, which were from Yakima, where there was a Jesuit, and then she had gotten her MDiv from the Jesuit School of Theology in Chicago. So she began herself to kind of put things together. Then she went to church and she liked the priest, and then she began to like the community a little bit. Pretty soon she found herself, at my suggestion at this point, talking to the pastor who was a layman. Actually, he's not a pastor in our terms. He's a pastoral minister. But she talked to him. She talked to the priest who was there. And one day she just came in and she made that decision so quickly. She said, I signed up for this parish and they have a part-time job for me. And it was like this. And what she began to realize is that she didn't have to, she was away from that parish. But it took 2 years. 2 years. That's a long time in my thought process. So you have to be indifferent in that sense. I hope I gave you a little flavor of that. The other thing that people who are spiritual directors need to be is they need to be rooted, and this seems obvious to me, but they have to be in a membership in a faith community of some kind. It doesn't have to be your own tradition. It doesn't have to be a faith community that you particularly, I have directed Presbyterians, a couple of Lutherans. I have a Lutheran pastor who came for a retreat and have some good friends among all of the traditions, Christian traditions mostly. But But there has to be a rootedness. A spiritual director is not like a counselor, who you can go to a counselor and, you know, they have the degrees and all those things. But if you're not rooted in a tradition, it's kind of, this is my thing, you know. It could be a shingle and my thing. So it's okay if you know the person is rooted in a tradition. You don't have to ask that. But it's like, where do you worship? And when we say rooted in a tradition, probably means involved in that tradition in some manner. You know, it's like a pastor, that's obvious. You know, in our traditions over the past, one of the things is that most spiritual directors were already pastors, ministers, religious men and women, monks, in that thing. But there are many, many lay people who are doing this, and they're wonderful. But there are some kind of parameters around that. This is a great one. I'm not a perfect person. I mean, you can't. I'm going to go through all of these. I have 8 possibilities, and you're going to say, this is God. Yeah, well, no. But one of the pieces of that is, this is not a perfect person, but somebody who engenders some trust. There's something in you that knows that you can trust this person, that you have a trust in them, that you can say that there's a certain maturity. They've been engaged with people. I don't think most of us would go to a 19 or 20-year-old because they don't have enough experience of life at this point. I think that's an important piece. We have to have some experience of life, unless they're very, very gifted and have had a lot. They've been seasoned. The way I want to say this is that we've had a little seasoning through some knowledge of, the way I would put it, is the passion, death, and resurrection. It's like, they know what it's like to have the thorn that is inside. The thorn that's their own personal thorn, the thorn that is personalities, the thorn that means that we've gone through fire and water, that each of us has our own kind of difficulties in life. I've really had some real senses of what that's been. So it's like, now, that's hard to find out about a person. I mean, you don't say, well, tell me what your big sorrows have been in life, you know. But you kind of know if you're talking to somebody, you know. Tell you a little more about that. I told you that they're often pastors, religious leaders. Not necessarily do they need to be. Ignatius, St. Ignatius, who was the founder of the Jesuits in the 16th century, 15th century, was a layman. His story is a wonderful story. His story is that he was hit by a cannonball, and he, when he was in the war, he was a great warrior, you know. He was off doing all the wonderful things for his country and his lady, you know, the ladies of the 14th, 15th century. But he was hit by a cannonball and laid up, and he needed to read, and he was going to read all these trashy romance novels. You know how you do when you want to read, do something like that. But that, there was nothing there. So he read The Life of Christ and The Lives of the Saints. Remember, in the 15th century, you didn't have a lot of books. They didn't have the Bible as per se. When you think about it, it was not translated at that point. And he began in his recovery to become attracted to this and wanted to be a saint like St. Francis of Assisi. And what he did is he began to listen to his own movements in his life. And through that, after he became well, he went to a place called Manresa, and he spent 6 or 8 months in there, and he wrote what they call the spiritual exercises, which has been a very foundational spiritual guide for this particular group of people, Jesuits and many other people. And it's called what they call the spiritual exercises is really a 30-day retreat that all Jesuits go through silently, often a retreat. What I do with that is I do that whole retreat over 9 months, and it's done in an everyday life. Tell you more about it at some point. The other thing a spiritual director needs to do is have the ability to ask questions, to pay attention, as Paul, to pay attention to what's going on. If you are in a spiritual direction experience and you're talking to somebody, and you can tell whether somebody's really paying attention to you, you need to have that listening skill to pay attention, not only to what you're saying, but what you're not saying. Not only to what you're doing, but what you're not doing, how your body is working, how you can see. It's a skill that counselors have, but it's a skill lots of us have. You can tell when somebody's paying attention to you. And that's a very important thing. And also to pay attention to what God is doing. to keep the focus on God, pay attention to the movements of God in this. I already told you, somebody who's presently engaged in spiritual direction and or supervision, there has to be in the spiritual direction situation, again, I'm speaking only of this narrow definition, one person helping another, an atmosphere that does trust, there's a safety. If you're going to seek help from someone, the atmosphere is as important as the person. Is it safe? Can you not be heard? Is it like a counselor's office? You know, is it like an office that people run in and out of? I mean, you're not going to talk about your soul if somebody's walking in, you know, just telling your deepest kinds of stuff. Those are kind of simple things, but they're very, very important. One of the things that I had a spiritual director once, who was very popular, who was one of the things to do, wonderful, wonderful person, but was constantly on the phone. You know, the phone would ring and he'd answer the phone. And I'd say to myself, there's something wrong with this. Especially, yeah. You know, so we talked about it, and then he didn't do it as much, but I was very discomfortable. I was just as uncomfortable with it. Somebody who knows their own boundaries. One of the other things is that spiritual direction has a beginning and an end. One of the things I know about people who are two on the Myers-Briggs, two on the Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, all those wonderful things that we do, the Jungian stuff. But there are a lot of people who really care about people, and they tend to listen and listen and listen, and you tell your story over and over and over again. It's got to have some beginning and end. It should be, an hour. It might mean you come back the next week and the next week, but you shouldn't have to be drained out over hours, unless it's a crisis. Now, there's a difference. And even with a crisis, you should be kind of careful about that. So, have some safety. The place is very important.
Can I just ask
you? Yeah, sure.
How much psychology is involved in this?
There should be some. I think, I'll just tell you, that the knowledge that a spiritual director should have, number one, the knowledge should be theologically based. There should be some theology behind that. This. It's not just something somebody picks up. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a theology degree, but you've done some theology work. You've read some books. You know, not only reading books, you've taught theology. You've been through classes of some kind. You've done something. So theology is very important because you have to know something about who God is. You have to know it from your heart, but also theologically. The Bible is very important. Some very clear understanding of Scripture. Because in my work, it's not everybody's work, but in my work, I use Scripture a lot to help people to understand where God is in their lives. That's why I've enjoyed Paul Rudy's work this week, because it's been very important the way you pray with the Bible. There's several ways of taking the Bible. You take the Bible as a Bible study and really study it and do some exegesis. You do it from the historical point of view. You can do it from the, you know, all of those kinds of view. You can do all of those things and read all kinds of things about it. But when you come to pray, you pray differently. You take the Scripture and you pray it differently. But it is helpful to know what's going on. You have to know who Paul is, you know, and some of this stuff about that, because it doesn't. It enhances that. Now, as far as the psychological, I think it's very important. And I think it's important to have not necessarily to have a degree in psychology, but to have some understanding, especially some of the basic issues of psychology, what we call transference and counter-transference. We know that when people come for a one-to-one experience, that sometimes they transfer their feelings onto the director or the counselor, and vice versa. So to have some of that knowledge, that's to me why you have a supervisor. And why, in my case, we have, when I'm training spiritual directors, I have groups, the group of spiritual directors, both those that are in training and those who are actually doing the work, who have a lot of in-service. It's expected that they go and take a class, or it's expected that they go and sit in on a class. It's expected that they read certain books. It's expected that they do. I mean, those are very important to me. It's also important from the point of view that the spiritual director knows what they can't do. It's like, I am not capable of helping a person through a terrible psychological crisis that really demands a psychiatrist or a psychologist or even a physician for that matter. One of the things we talk about early on is to know things like how healthy they are to begin with, physically, you know. And also, so I'm not trained to do that. And so I need to know that when I'm hearing something and I hear a red flag, I have a woman that has been coming to me for about 6 or 8 months. And to begin with, she started off with her spiritual prayer, and she has some wonderful insights into prayer, and I basically listen. Pretty soon, I began to hear her say things to me like, I really love you. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing to hear. And I express that back and say, that's, you know, go through some of that. Then pretty soon I began to say, I don't want to hurt you. And then, and all in the same thing, pretty soon so red flags were hitting on me. And then one day we were talking and she always kind of wanted to get off onto what she was not doing, you know, she needed a job. She wanted to know what God's will was. And so we tried to say, well, what is it that you are looking for and what's your deepest desires and some of those kinds of things. But she always got off to, pretty soon she came to me one day and I knew this was wrong. This wasn't wrong for her, but she was very depressed, very angry, very upset about the fact that I hadn't fixed it for her. And I said to myself, this woman is in trouble. And so we talked quite a bit about her needing help. And she kept saying, no, 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 no. And I had to say, I can't help you until you can help yourself in the spiritual life. But I had to be able to say, and so I had to have enough knowledge of what it felt like, you know, in that sense. So the biggest place, one of the biggest places is patient listening. I told you about that before, just to allow God to speak through a variety of means. There's a fine line to gently move a person or give a big push. I think I said that. Okay, I'm going to stop and see where you are. If you have some questions or you want to add to that, and then I'll just go on to how do you find somebody like this. God, person.
You're talking about boundaries, and I heard what you were saying about like an hour session. How important is it also to set up some kind of sense of we'll do like 3 sessions and assess, or
yes, very important.
Then
as somebody going to a director, say we're going to check this out for, and what I usually do the first few times is see them a little more often, like once a week if I can, or once every 2 weeks, and then say, okay, we're going to go until October or whatever it be, and then let's see, because sometimes there's a fit and sometimes there's not. You know, it's like you might think this person will fit, but after 3 or 4 times, it just doesn't feel right. And to be able to say that and own that. I don't take offense at that as a spiritual director. Some people would, I suspect, but I don't. If you're coming to me and we think that we're kind of not clicking, things are not clicking in our lives, then we need to say to each other, this isn't working, and then I can give somebody suggestions for another person. Those boundaries are very important.
Yes. I have actually 2 questions, but one of them just went out of my mind. The other one is, the first thing I had a question about was when you were talking about the things that we need in order to be a spiritual director, and you said one thing was very important was prayer life, to have a relationship in prayer with God. And would it be presumptuous to ask you what your prayer life is like? You don't have to answer that.
My prayer life is like up and down all over the place. I pray every day. There are 2 ways that I pray. I pray every morning, usually in the morning for an hour. My prayer life has taken lots of different turns. At the present moment, because while I'm here, I'm doing a lot of prayer with what's going on here, which is really wonderful. And of course, praying to Psalms. Mary Boyce and I have done a lot of, we've gone out together to the falls and we pray the Psalms, Psalm 100, 304.
To the Liturgy of the Hours?
Yeah,
or,
yeah. Just 2 Psalms.
Okay, good.
The other way I pray is I live in a community of 4 other people and we pray every morning for about 15 minutes together. My prayer life is basically the other part of my prayer life, which has really come from my age and wisdom and a lot of other people is that I'm so conscious of the presence of God in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. I'm not conscious, but right now I'm living in a chalet with a little baby. There's, you know, a little kid that's learning how to walk. There's something about the innocence of a baby that gives me the face of God, and just for a moment to praise that, you know. I do that occasionally. I'm not real good at that at times, but that's the way it comes. I see the rain, you know, as a blessing.
Can you speak a little bit about journaling in prayer?
I journal, yes. Journaling, I suggest people journal. Mm-hmm. I'm not real good at it, though, you know. I did a journaling workshop, a place to journal. Journaling is a very important piece of our prayer life. One of the things that we ask people for in there before they do the program that I'm developing is a spiritual autobiography. How has God been present in your life already? You know, when you come to a spiritual director, you don't come flat out things. So it's like one of the things I ask right away is, who is God for you? And right away, who is God? And how has God been present in your life in the past? And to me, journaling is a very important part of that. In terms of what happens with that journal is that you begin to go back and see patterns. Mm-hmm. I see patterns of myself in my past life, so to speak, where when I got very desperate, my prayer was of a demand. Mm-hmm. My prayer was of a demand. Mm-hmm. God, I'm just in this terrible agony of what's going on in my life and all those kinds of things. And I myself have suffered from depression, so mm-hmm. I've had that kind of depression attitude towards prayer and just get this out of my life type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a spiritual director who not noticed that. Mm-hmm. And sent me on to somebody. My second thing of that is that right now my prayer life is much more praise. I was interested this morning in my own speaking of that. It just, as life goes on a little bit, I have a lot more praise, you know, in my life. And I'm just sort of delighted in that. So I'm in a delightful space right now. And but I have had the pain. And so my experience is enough for me to know that when people come in pain, you have to go.
That's the second part of my, what the questions. Now you said one of the first things you ask is, where is God in your life? Is there a set of questions you give to people you train?
I don't do a lot of set of questions. I do a lot of kind of give me a little bit about where you are with God. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces of people last week said to me, and I really want to say this, is that this is not an isolated part of your life. It's like when you go to spiritual direction, you don't just talk about God. Because you bring yourself. It's a whole thing. You're talking about your whole life. You're talking about your relationships. The spiritual life is about relationships. It's about relationship with God. It's about relationship with yourself. And it's about relationship with others. It's, to me, that's the simplest kind of thing. If any of those are out of whack, then you're out of whack. So when you are talking about your relationship with yourself, where some people have low self-esteem, they don't believe they're worth anything. I mean, I get a lot of people who say, well, I don't pray. You know, my prayer isn't anything. Or that I can't do this, I can't do that, or whatever. Relationship with your spouse, this is not marriage counseling, but of course there's gonna be some issues around it. Relationship with people you work with. Mm-hmm. For the most part, that's what I do a lot, because in communities and organizations that are especially faith organizations who have personnel issues. I ran a retreat house for about 3 years, and the most difficult thing was the issues around the personnel, because one of the things we church people do is we bring people into workforce who are also very faith oriented, but you know exactly what I'm going to say, don't you? But they're needy, you know, they're not necessarily professionally trained. And then when you begin to call them to their professional kind of stuff, you're the pastor who is firing them. And how could you be a good Christian? And, you know, those wonderful kinds of things. So you kind of have to have that kind of sense in yourself that, I mean, people need to work through that. I think personally, and I feel very strongly about this, anybody who is in a kind of leadership position in a church needs to have some sort of spiritual direction. Now, there is a possibility of a group spiritual direction. I belong to a prayer group, too. That's another part of my prayer. I belong to a prayer group that meets once a month. There are three Roman Catholic priests in it and one other sister. And in that prayer group, we pray together. That's number one. We spend some time privately in prayer and in shared prayer. And then we have what we call a review of life. Each of us tells what's gone on in our lives over the last month. And as this group has grown, we've grown to trust each other extremely well. We have people who have had, we've had priests who've had difficulties with their sexuality, which is also one of the issues that is. But now, we don't pretend to be spiritual directors for them, but what we do is listen carefully and give a little more help in saying, you promised 3 months ago that you were going to get a counselor. Where are you with them? Those kinds of things.
Accountability.
It's an accountability, right. So the prayer group is another piece of that for me. Any other?
I was just wondering, is it typically something problem-focused, like, gee, I don't know what to do with my life, help me guide me through the occupation, or people come saying, I want to deepen my prayer life, guide me in doing that? Is that just
a little bit? A little bit. Well, let me go through this. Why do people seek spiritual direction? Many, many reasons. The predominant one is some sort of prayer experience. They want some prayer experience. They realize that something's missing. They're dissatisfied with the present state of their prayer life. They're stuck. Now, I have to say, with my own experiences, is that because I am in a religious community that is expected of us from the very beginning, my first experiences of it were not good because you just did it and I didn't know what I was doing. But gradually, so it's generally a growth experience in prayer for us. But it does come to crisis points at times. They're often crisis points. Somebody oftentimes, it may be a vocation. I'm in a place where I want to be, I feel called to the ministry. You know, I feel called to marriage even. I feel called to something. I feel called to being a spiritual director. I often get that. You know, I feel something. Or they're coming to some people are coming to a decision about leaving their particular position. In my case, I often have people who are leaving the priesthood, you know, and this is the hard part. You don't want people to leave, but you want them to be free. The goal is to be free in God, you know, not to be bound by the restrictions of rules that seem to have bound them, but to be free, to freely offer themselves. So that's one of the goals, is to get the freedom in Christ, the freedom in Jesus. And so sometimes it's not good to be in the ministry. Sometimes it's not good. You know, I wouldn't advise people to leave, but I certainly would see the freedom come as they gradually come to that decision. Decisions are part of it, to make a decision. Often, sometimes it's a faith crisis, a simple faith crisis. I don't believe in God anymore. Now, when somebody comes to
faith crisis,
that's a pretty strong faith question. I mean, what I have to say, the irony of that is if somebody's coming to talk to me about not believing in God, I think they still do. But what I have to be able to say is, what's that all about? What do you mean by that? It's like, but probably it comes over the crisis of a grief is another one, the grief thing. I got 2 minutes. Let me go through this, and then you can ask a couple questions. How do you find somebody? That's a question people ask. How do you find somebody? That is not an easy thing to do. You just don't go through the telephone book and find a spiritual director. You know, the best way to go is to find somebody already is in spiritual direction, a pastor, you know, somebody you know, somebody you've had a conversation with, and find out who's in the area. That to me is, word of mouth is the best. But sometimes you don't have that opportunity. The other place to go, and often one of the best places that I find, is to retreat centers, places that already have men and women who are giving retreats or being in a retreat ministry. They happen to be mostly men, you know, Roman Catholic, but here, you know, you have a lot of Susan and those people who know of people. You don't have to necessarily take the person, but that's what they do in the retreat center, is they do give spiritual direction. They do that, and they would have perhaps people that you could go to. I think your pastor may know people in the community. may know of other resources to do that. There are centers that train spiritual directors. They're all over the United States. There's a center in Washington, D.C. called Shalem. They're beginning to pop up all over the place. There's a magazine out, there's an organization out called Spiritual Directors International, which is ecumenical in nature. And in its ecumenical nature, there are all kinds of, that organization has grown incredibly in the last 5 years. And the Spiritual Directors International has all kinds of resources for that. But the resources are somewhat limited, I have to say that.
And where's that organization out of Washington, D.C.?
Now, the Spiritual Directors International is out of California, and I'm very sorry I don't have its exact address, but I can get it for you. We have one more.
Do you have some good books you could recommend?
Yes, I do. For spiritual? This book is called Practice of Spiritual Direction, and it's by William Barry and William Conley. This is probably the traditionally most read book about spiritual direction. There's a book called Soul Friend that's written by
Kenneth Leach,
got it. You know, and actually it's in the bookstore.
Kenneth Leach.
And there's out of the Shalem thing is Tilden Edwards. Tilden Edwards has a book out called I'm very bad about names. Spiritual Friend, Soul Friend. And Kenneth Leach is Soul Friend, and Tilden Edwards is Spiritual Friend. Once you get into those books, they always have more. Those are the best books. There's a couple of women authors. There's one woman author who is an Episcopalian woman, and I'm really hard-pressed to know what her name is. She has some wonderful books in that, too.
What would you pick if you had one?
I'd pick this one, The Spiritual Direction, The Practice of Spiritual Direction.
Does that go along with your seal? Is that what you call
it?
Yeah,
it's pretty close to it. It has the, let me give you just very quickly here, the Practice of Spiritual Direction is talking about, their chapters start is what it is, the centrality of religious experience, fostering relationship between the directee, as he calls it, and God, the relationship between God and individuals, fostering a contemplative attitude. It's very, very, it's an older book, but it's still, I think, one of the definitive books. That's my opinion.
Have you published your seal?
No. I do not do well. I do. Okay. I know it's 10:30 and I'd be happy to stay around and answer questions, but those of you who want to go can, and you can turn off the tape. So, thank you.
Awesome.